In the relative anonymity of Division II, Philly's Herb McGee became college basketball's second all-time winningest coach. Only Duke's Mike Krzyzewski has more wins. A Basketball Hall of Famer, McGee has fashioned himself as the shot doctor. In fact, once, former Sixers coach Brett Brown asked him to offer some advice and instruction to a certain player.
He said to me, I want you to do three sessions with Ben Simmons, so have your daughter send me a bill for that. And I said, okay, but I won't do it unless you ask Ben and he gives the okay. And he never got back to me, which means that Ben said, no, I don't want to do it.
More coming up with the legendary Herb McGee next on Fresh 24. Herb McGee, what an honor. A Basketball Hall of Famer. Just to start, when you ended your coaching career, you were the winningest NCAA Division II men's basketball coach of all time, second all time, when you take all the divisions into consideration, behind Duke's Mike Krzyzewski. No great shame there. You won a national title back in 1970. You're known as the Shot Doctor, born in Philly, West Catholic High. Philadelphia Textile, I shudder to think you were once drafted by the Boston Celtics. We'll go into that. And of course, we'll talk about Sixers. Herb McGee, welcome to Fresh 24.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Coach, I got to get right to one of my favorite stories. I'm the halftime host for Sixers basketball. This had to be the 80s. And I was in charge of doing all the halftime features. I went to Textile to interview you. And I remember we talked about you being the shot doctor and you going to the free throw line and shooting free throws blindfolded. I don't imagine that was the only time you did that, but you did do that, right?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Do you remember how many you made or how many did you typically make?
I really don't because I couldn't see. So I
was shooting. Although I was there to count.
Yeah, I was shooting. And I have to get warmed up naturally. And then when I start shooting and you zero in on where the basket is, then you can do it, I think. It's a matter of producing the correct stroke, which is really basic shooting in on any level. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I have done that. I've done with my eyes closed and all kinds of different things.
By the way, for the record, I tell people 8 out of 10. So let's just move on and leave it there.
Okay, that's fine.
Hey, could you have helped Ben Simmons?
Without question. As a matter of fact, Brett Storm asked me to. He said to me, I want you to do three sessions with Ben Simmons, so have your daughter send me a bill for that. And I said, okay, but I won't do it unless you ask Ben, and he gives the okay. And he never got back to me, which means that Ben said, no, I don't want to do it. So he's a young man that really never wanted to get better. And I think that's the biggest problem that he's had in his career.
Does it frustrate you that somebody that talented did not seem, at least from your opinion, willing to repair his shot?
No, exactly. And it's not like we were going to, you know, get married or something like that. I'm just going to teach him how to shoot. And all he had to do was just come the first time. And if he didn't like it, that's fine. You know, but I would have definitely have helped him because I, you know, it's so obvious to people who don't really know a lot about shooting, looking at his stroke, and it had everything to do with his guide hand. You know, his shooting hand, left hand, of course, and then his right hand was messed up. And nothing will throw up your shot more than the improper positioning of your guide hand.
Yeah, and of course, for those who forget, Ben was left-handed. Or do you think he was left-handed? Some think he favored his left, but he was really right-handed.
Yeah, they say he could throw a football with either hand, a baseball with either hand, and it didn't help him because he didn't really. And when your coach tells you that he wants you to take at least 1 3 a game and you don't do it, then it's obvious what you have. You have a confidence problem.
Now, you did work with some Sixers and some NBA players, right?
Yeah.
Who'd you work with?
Jameer Nelson, Malik Rose. Let's see. There was a few others.
Did you ever work with Charles Barkley?
I did work with Charles. Actually, mm-hmm. Charles was the first guy. Matty Gukas was the coach, and he called me and said, Herb, we need you to help Barkley with his foul shot. And when I went over to St. Joe's, I started working with him. And I could tell right away, it's the first time I had met Charles, I could tell right away that his attention span was about 30 seconds. So I had to get in there and make my point to him. And all he was doing wrong was he never finished his shot. His shooting hand would shoot the ball, and he'd pull his arm back for some bad habit. And then we got him to straighten out his shot, keep your follow through towards the basket. And he ended up his career as a pretty good foul shooter and a decent three-point shooter, too.
Are the basics of shooting the same as they've always been?
Without question. The shooting hand, guide hand, how to use your legs, and the target. And what you need to do if your grip is wrong, then it's over. If you have the wrong grip on the ball, you'll never be a good shooter. The idea is to make sure the ball comes off, if you're right-handed, your index and middle finger, and then the snap of the wrist with the thumb coming through to force the ball off of there. And then the guide hand comes into play. But if your shooting hand is wrong, you got no shot,
so to speak. And to your point, a lot of times you'll see players and they do the exaggerated this after they let it go just to, you know, sort of remind themselves, I guess, that that's what they need
idea.
To do.
It's a good idea. All you have to do is watch Steph Curry. I have a picture from Sports Illustrated front page of a few years back where you see Curry taking a jumper and the ball is halfway to the basket already and he's still in the release position with his shooting hand and his guide hand. And you can see the position of his legs, his feet, and everything about the shot. It's an ideal picture to show kids because everybody realizes that Steph probably is the greatest shooter to ever live.
Well, I was going to ask you that, so please elaborate because you've seen close to 80 years worth of basketball.
Yeah, without question, I don't think there's any doubt that he is the best that ever lived. Mm. If you watch him shoot before the game, some of the shots he can take and from the distance he takes them. I think the one year that the story was during the summer, he made something like 75 straight NBA three-pointers. Mm-hmm. Now, the NBA three-pointer is worth 3 points. That's a decent shot. You know, the college basketball, was when it started, it was 19 feet, 9 inches. They gradually moved it back. But the NBA line is 25 feet, 9 inches. So it's fixed 6 feet past the top of the circle. Mm. And when I would teach guys in the NBA, I'd have to come out to my floor at school and walk that off and tape it because we don't have those kind of lines on the floor. And it's amazing how tough that shot is. But you see guys who can do it, they do it with regular. And guys who shoot in the mid to upper 40s in the NBA, they are great shooters without question.
By the way, I'm sure you meant 23-9, which is the three-point arc, not
– Yeah, 23.
I think you said 25, right. Okay.
I did. It's 23-9.
Yep. I imagine your earliest basketball memories have to be what, late 40s, early 50s. Did you ever imagine the NBA game being played as it's being played today?
No, not at all. And especially with the skill level and the – for example – when I was in college, the best team in the league were the Celtics. And that was Bob Cousy, Bill Sharman, Sam Jones, Casey Jones, John Havlicek, Bill Russell, Tom Heinsohn, and those guys. And I would go down to the convention hall to watch the games. And we had a pretty cool way of getting in sometimes. One guy would go in and pay and go around the side door, open it up. And we had a way of jumping the fence and walking in the side door, you know, in order to save $5, which was the cost of the admission at the time. But they were the best team. And the Warriors were a very good team. I mean, Paul Arizin, you know, always listed as one of the top 75 players of all time. And then later on, Billy Cunningham and, of course, the Big Dipper, you know, Wally Jones, et cetera. But the Celtics were just unbeatable. Everybody knows that they're unbeatable for a number of years.
Yeah, it was 8 straight titles, and you actually came to that team amidst that run. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But tell me, do you like today's NBA game?
I do. I do. I marvel at the athleticism. I mean, there's guys, this guy, Anthony Carter, who plays for Minnesota.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards, yeah. He can actually literally dive through the basket, it looks like.
Yeah.
He's incredible. Plus, he's got a really good shot. He's got a great motor. And he's not even first team all pro.
He will be. It's only a matter of time, I think.
Yeah. And that's an up-and-coming team, too, the Minnesota team. The NBA game is terrific, I think. I mean, it's exciting, and there's an awful lot of really good basketball players in that league.
Do you think, now you just paid homage to today's game and the wild athleticism that's out there on the floor, do you think with your shooting accuracy that you could have played today just to come in, play 5, 6, 7 minutes a half, hit a couple of shots, try to guard a guy, and sit down?
I would like to think that,
right.
But I don't know about, 5'9", 5'10", 150 pounds at when I played in college. The funny thing about it, Mark, I was drafted by the Boston Celtics. I was taken in the 7th round, but at that time it was like the 65th pick or something. It was just X number of teams in the league at the time. And if I had made the Celtics, and it didn't go up because I broke my hand during the summer and I didn't go up for the tryout. If I had made the Celtics, I would have made $5,000, which is the same amount of money I made as an assistant coach with the with Philadelphia Textile. So right. It wasn't a matter of what's going on now as far as money is concerned, with the minimum wage being close to $1 million a year. But as far as me being able to play in this day and age, I don't know. I really don't know. I think I'd get killed on the defensive end.
Well, my size. You were an amazing player. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Celtics and being drafted by them and, of course, your career after our halftime segment. But something I always wondered, and I know my answer to this question, but, people will say, old schoolers will say, oh, Will, he can go out there and have his, have his day. Or Oscar Robertson, he could still dominate most of these kids. Can you... aside from whether or not that argument is correct, can you even compare eras?
Yeah, I think certain guys you can compare. I think Wilt Chamberlain in today's game, I don't think he'd get 50 a game like he did back in the day or even 30 a game, but he'd be a solid, solid basketball player on any team. And I think any team would love to have him with his athletic ability. I mean, he's playing a foot and a half above the rim all the time. His timing was incredible. He's one of the strongest human beings that ever played the game. And I think there's no question that he would be a big-time player in today's game.
I'm just trying to picture today's game where a lot of the big guys have the ability now to play outside, drawing him away from the basket. Certainly defensively, I don't think he would be as effective because they'd be drawing him out probably all the time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because that never happened to him when he played. But it's interesting, and I guarantee you, in my opinion, that he could play in today's game without question. There's no question about it.
Just for fun, could Wilt, or let's say Bill Russell, who is a very good defensive player, even at 6'9", could they even slow down Joel Embiid today?
Yes. Yes, I do. I do think they could. I mean, besides the athletic ability they both had, the intelligence level that Bill Russell especially came to play with. If you watch him, he cut off angles. He did all kinds of things, and he studied the game, and he would study Embiid's game, and Embiid would end up having to take him outside, and then you got a problem. I don't know if he can stay with him, especially the way they get the ball to him, and he gets the three-point shot, which is an incredible ability to shoot the basketball, that guy. I mean, he's just incredible.
Yeah.
So, it certainly would be interesting. You can't get – nobody can ever see it because of – they're not around anymore, but it's certainly a question that everybody will ask all the time.
The NBA playoffs are here, and I know our Sixers are out of it, but I should know from personal experience, the atmosphere at playoff games is something you just can't beat. The fans are into it. Every fan is in a seat, no empty seats. They're into every possession. They're screaming as loud as they can. It is absolutely awesome. Get into the action With today's sponsor, Game Time. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA. They make ticket buying faster and easier with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat in just two taps. Philly, let's change the game. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the app, create an account, and use code ZOO, that's Z-O-O, for $20 off your first purchase. Remember, terms apply, so redeem that code Z-O-O for your $20 discount at GameTime.co. Coach, who was your favorite player growing up and why?
Great question. I would say Tom Gola, because he was the hero of Philadelphia basketball and obviously did it on a national level because he won the NIT as a freshman and the NCAA tournament as a junior. They won that. And senior year, he lost to San Francisco, who had Bill Russell and Sam Jones. But he was a heroic kind of guy, too. A lot of people don't know this, but he had over 2,000 points and also 2,000 rebounds when he played in college. And when he got to the pros, he played like the point guard position. You know, he was an all NBA player, averaging like 15 and 10 assists a game or whatever he did. So,
and he was about what, 6'5", 6'6", right?
6'5", 6'6", yeah.
Yeah.
Great athlete and a great man. Just a great, great guy.
Do you have a favorite player today?
Not really. I enjoy just watching them, and I marvel at the athleticism. So a lot of people in the city of Philadelphia would say Joel Embiid, but not me. I think Joel Embiid is an unbelievably good player, but he seems like he's hurt all the time.
Well, how about a guy like Tyrese Maxey? I think you could certainly appreciate
him. Yeah, there's a guy you would say. Tyrese Maxey, yeah. I know if you ask my wife, she would say Tyrese Maxey. She loves Tyrese Maxey. That's all she talks about when we watch the games together is Tyrese.
Coach, one more old school question. You were entering your teen years when the shot clock was brought in the mid-50s. Some say it saved the game. You agree with that?
Yeah, now you're asking me as a player?
Well, just as a fan of the game, whatever the state of the game was beforehand, did it in fact save the game?
I think it's been really good for the game. Now, as a coach, I was one of those guys like Dean Smith that if we had a little bit of a lead, I'm going to sit on the ball and make you come out and guard me. And then we would try to back cut you in a series of back cut plays. But when it came in, and it came in, first of all, and it came into the college game, it came in at like 45 seconds, which wasn't too bad. But then it got to 30, and it was a whole different story and a whole different way of coaching that you would have to speed up your offense. Now, as a player, the 30-second clock is great for the players, and I think it's great for the fans, too, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. You spent your life in D2, but you mentioned Dean Smith. You ever have the chance to rub up with,
I met him
guys like that?
Yeah, I met him at a coach's clinic. One of the guys I became good friends with was Mike Krzyzewski, because I was inducted into the Hall of Fame, the College Basketball Hall of Fame with him, and Roy Williams, who when I was about to be inducted into Naismith, I developed a relationship with him at the dinner where they made the big announcement. And he gave me the best advice that you could ever give a guy who's going to speak. And he said to me, Coach, make sure you prepare what you're going to say at the Hall of Fame, he said, because you only get one chance. He said, make sure you ask and you make sure you thank the right people. Make sure you express yourself completely. And my thing to you would be make sure you prepare it. And I did. And I thought it came off pretty good. And mainly thanks to Roy just to remind me to do the correct way when you get up there.
Coach, how was it for you standing up there and knowing that there are all these D1 people, NBA people, and you accomplished what you did? And I have to tell you that no matter what league you do it in, it's an accomplishment. What was that like for you, being in that situation where all of these other people from other levels of the game were there to see you and hear you speak?
I remember when I told my wife, I said to her like a year later, I said, man, I wish I wasn't in the Hall of Fame. And she looked at me like I was crazy. She said, why is that? And I said, because maybe I could still go back in. Maybe I would be elected again. That's how much enjoyable, how enjoyable that the weekend was. The Hall of Fame, the people that run the Hall of Fame from John DeLiva on down, who's the president, are really first class. Have you ever been up there for one of those ceremonies, Mark?
Oh, many of them. Larry Brown, Charles Barkley, Allen Iverson, you name it.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. It really is. Now, I'll go up again this year because Doug Collins is going in, and I got to be pretty friendly with Doug Collins, and Bo Ryan's going in. Two of my favorite guys are going in at the same time. So I will go up, and what the Hall of Fame does is they take care of your expenses for the whole time you're there. Which is a big thing for me. So,
yeah.
And when Jay went in, he asked me to be on the stage with them, because what they tell you to do when you're being inducted is you can have a couple guys or a couple people that are Hall of Fame members who can sit on the stage with you when you give your talk. And that was probably one of the greatest things ever happened to me. I got Coach Jack Ramsey to be my presenter. They call it your presenter, even though they don't present anything. They don't say anything. They just go up with you when you're being introduced. That was a big thrill for me. And also a big thrill that Jay asked me to do the same thing for him.
Coach Herbie Gee, we're going to have more of your personal story coming up. But first, it's our halftime segment. And the first part of our halftime segment is the Garage Beer six-pack of questions, Coach. It's brought to you by Garage Beer, beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. This is simple. I'm going to give you a choice between two things, and you just blurt out the answer. Are you ready?
Yep.
Cheesesteak or soft pretzel?
Soft pretzel.
Center City or South Jersey?
South Jersey.
Gritty or Philly Fanatic?
Philly Fanatic.
Meek Mill or Hall & Oates?
Don't know either one. No, I'm just Hall & Oates.
Dr. J or Allen Iverson throwback jersey?
Probably Dr. J.
Liberty Bell or Rocky Steps?
Oh, the Steps for sure.
The six-pack of questions brought to you by Garage Beer, beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at Garage Beer. That's Drink Garage Beer, all one word, drinkgaragebeer.com. All right, a handful of artists from my music library. You tell me if you have them or not. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm going to stay old school here. The Beatles.
Yes.
Frank Sinatra.
Without question.
Miles Davis.
No.
Oh, the Beach Boys.
No.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Pink Floyd.
Not a chance.
Hey, you know Pink Floyd, though, right? You've heard
of him. I know who he is, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Or what that is, yeah.
Yeah, well, Dark Side of the Moon is one of the biggest, if not the biggest selling album of all time, but... Listen, I'm a little bit younger than you. It was part of that generation. So let's move on. When did you first pick up a basketball?
Probably when I was in fourth or fifth grade.
What were the circumstances? You remember?
Yeah, somebody in our neighborhood, and we had a driveway down the back of our street in 45th in Baltimore, and somebody put a basket up. One of the kids' fathers put a basket up. And, you know, you start messing around with it, so you start shooting on it. And I just loved the game from there on in.
By the way, 45th in Baltimore, you ever go to the old arena?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
I saw my first Sixers game there, the first year of the team when it moved from Syracuse. It was a dump then.
Yeah. Convention Hall wasn't much better, Mark.
You know, I love Convention Hall.
So did I. In fact,
most of the seating, I try to explain to people, was in an upper deck. The lower tier was really kind of small. It was only about, I don't know, 8-9 rows, something like that. But it was cozy. Of course, the old-timers, the Palestra, I want to talk about that because I want to touch on the Big Five. But take me back to the mid to late 50s. You're playing at West Catholic High. Jimmy Lineham is a teammate. The late Jim Boyle's a teammate. Describe the Philly basketball scene back then. Where did you go for the best runs, and what other players were playing with or against you that eventually emerged from that era?
Yeah, I learned how to play. My parish was St. Francis de Sales at 47th in Springfield, and one of the few parishes that had a gym. It was down the stairs like a dungeon, And it was painted green all the time. So everybody could tell right away if you played at DeSales because your socks and your shoes turned green from the paint. So, and your hands were all green. But that was a great place because you would go down there on a Saturday to get into a game and there would be guys sitting on the sideline, that which meant that if you lost your game, you're probably not getting back on the court. There was always at least five or six teams that had what they called winners. Mm-hmm. And then the playgrounds, Sherwood Playground, King Sessing Playground. There's a number of them. 69th and Geyer Playground, Finnegan Playground. And that's where we played all the time. And they all had leagues. So we played in those leagues too. We had a team that went and played in those leagues. So that's my first thoughts.
Coach, back then, of course, segregation was an issue. Some Jim Crow laws were still in effect. Did you have the chance to mix it up with any black players?
Only during the summer leagues. There was none on any of our teams. Because, you know, you did guys with your neighborhood. In your neighborhood, mm-hmm. that's who you mm-hmm. played with. And but you would go to certain playgrounds and there would be guys on black teams or all black teams. And it was exciting because the guys could play. I mean, they could really play. And that's all you're looking for at the time is to get a good run and to be competitive. That's all.
While we're on the subject of the 50s, there are a lot of young people out there. They hear the term Big Five. They don't really know what it means. Temple, Villanova, Penn, St. Joe's, LaSalle. The so-called City Series, these games were played at the Palestra. They were doubleheaders. A Big Five team would play an out-of-town team in the first game, and then you had the two Big Five teams in the nightcap, and it was just sheer glory for about 4.5-5 hours. For the young kids, describe what the Big Five was like and what it meant to basketball fans in Philly.
Well, it was everything in the city of Philadelphia. I'll give you an example. I'm coaching, and we got a chance to play at the Palestra with my teams. They would invite us in, and we would either bring an opponent. One year I played Kentucky Wesleyan, another year Tennessee State. A couple of years, Cheney State with John Cheney coaching. And once in a while, we'd get a game with a Big Five school at the Palestra. But as a kid growing up, the Palestra was like going to church. You know, you went to that and you almost wanted to bless yourself as you walked through the doors. And we used to get in there sometimes on Saturday. A guy would let us in and we'd play pickup. And it was a thrill, really, to play in the Palestra. When I was in high school, the Catholic League playoffs and the public league playoffs and the city championship game is being played at the Palestra. And you wouldn't say during the year, we got to make the playoffs. It was all, we got to get to the Palestra. That's everything was about the Palestra. And I think it's great what they've done. They're kind of trying to bring it back with the way they have made the Big Five now into a round robin tournament with the champion being played at the Palestra. So the Palestra is the mecca of college basketball. I mean, there's nothing like it. You know, to play in the Palestra was such a big thing. It was just incredible. And well, I think it still is.
And up until he finished coaching, Mike Krzyzewski of Duke used to bring his teams there to practice if he had some time. And even Greg Popovich, the San Antonio Spurs, would have his pro team come in there just to talk about the Palestra and what it meant. Coach, Jefferson University, Philadelphia University, before that, Philadelphia Textile before that, that's where you played your college ball. Why did you stay home?
I just liked it. I liked the place. They really took care of me when I was in school. I remember telling Bucky Harris, who was my coach, right before I was graduating, he said, "Herb, what are you going to do?" And I said, "I have a job in the city, but I want to be a coach." And he said, "Okay, come see me tomorrow." And I went and I came into his office the next day and he said, "Okay, you got a job here. You're full-time next year. Be my assistant. You'll be the JV coach." And then he started naming the other things. You'll teach phys ed classes. You'll coach the cross-country team. We might have you take the tennis team. I said, "I can do all that, but I'm going to have a job here." He said, "Yeah."
So that's, by the way, I think that came after you were drafted by the Celtics and you broke your hand, but we're going to talk about the Celtics in a second. As a player, you scored over 2,200 points. 3,000 is the benchmark for the all-timers in college. That is, if you even play that long. None of the really good players even play long enough to get that. Do you think if they had a three-point shot, you might have gotten a lot closer to 3,000?
Oh, without question. You know, like if I averaged 10 field goals, 11 field goals a game, 9 of them or 8 of them or sometimes 10 of them would be from the three-point line. You got to keep in mind that it was only the top of the circle. And if that was there at the time, you can imagine I'd be stopping off the fast break and shooting it rather than going for a layup just to get the extra point. So, no, I would have had many, many, many more points, no question. Because if it was available to you, you're going to take it all the time.
So, as we alluded to, 1963, the NBA draft was 15 rounds. And I just have to tell you, if you look it up, some of the teams didn't even draft after like the seventh or eighth round. Like, why bother? You got all these players. The league itself, by the way, was only 8 teams back in 63. Anyway, you're picked in the seventh round by Boston. But again, you broke your hand and then what? This is before training camp and you decided you can make the same amount doing something else. So why bother?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a thrill. I can tell you right now, I was excited about being drafted. And it was certainly the big story around a lot in Philadelphia, but certainly around Philadelphia Textile, that one of their players was drafted by the Boston Celtics. I wish I now had gotten better and gone up there, but they were already starting their season. Now, the chances of making the team, who knows, but here's the guys that were on the team. Bob Cousy and Bill Sharman, Sam Jones and Casey Jones, and John Havlicek. Now, every one of those guys, when I went to the Hall of Fame to visit, every one of those guys had a plaque or a picture hanging in the Hall of Fame. So every single player that would have been ahead of me was a Hall of Famer already. So it would have been tough to make that team. And I had decided I was going to try to play in the Eastern League, which was a great league, a lot of good teams, a lot of good players. And I could have played, but I changed my mind about that too.
You had one of the greatest all-time runs by any coach anywhere, at any level, college, pro, what have you. During all this success, did you have any other offers from any other schools?
Yes, I did.
Do you want to get specific?
No, I don't, to be honest with you. I really had no interest. I visited one of the schools. They were all Division I, obviously. And I visited one of the schools. I also had a couple opportunities to be an assistant in the NBA, which I rejected too. I wanted to stay at Textile. I wanted to stay there. I felt I owed it to them to continue on. It's like after 3 years, we won a national championship in 1970. And to be honest with you, Mark, I thought I was going to do it every other year. They asked me after the game, they said, "Coach, you just won. You won 29-8, 27 in a row, and you won the championship." And I went like this. I'll never forget it. I said, "Yeah, it wasn't that hard either." We had won our games by, what do you hear the numbers? 17, 27, 48, 20, and 16. That was our run to the national championship. And it was one of those, you know, catching magic.
Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Lightning in a bottle. Yeah, that's what it was. So, but no, I didn't really, wasn't tempted. I was offered jobs and offered the interview for jobs, and I never really was tempted to leave.
I have to imagine, because it was D2, at times you played in some, let's call it, strange gyms. What was the strangest venue you played in when you were coaching?
We were at, there was a couple of them, but the one that stands out for me is Glassboro State, which is now Rowan. They played on a stage. So people sat in the audience, like you're at a movie. People sat in the audience and the curtain opened up and there's the basketball court. And that's where they played their games. Obviously, you know, it wasn't 94 by 50. So, you know, I was taking shots from mid court, you know, and it was like maybe a 25 or 30 footer because the court was so small. But
so the court isn't even 94 feet at this point.
No, it's not regulation. There were a couple of those places we played. King's College had one of those places up in Wilkes-Barre that wasn't anywhere near it. So it was certainly some of the places we play were different. You know, first of all, you're not going to get a good whistle at a lot of the different places. And secondly, I went out one time as captain and we're playing somebody. And I remember the two other captains came out and the referee came out to talk to us. And the one kid said, "Hi, Uncle Bill." And the guy, the referee said, "How's mom? How's your mother? How's your father? Oh, everything's fine." So I went back to Bucky Harris. I said, "We got a little problem here tonight, coach." The other guy's related to the referee. So that was the biggest thing. What kind of a whistle are you going to get when you went on the road? But it was exciting and fun.
If you had a chance, coach, to advise a young coach, maybe just starting out, the most important thing to remember in order to become a success, what is that?
Well, that changes every year now, you know, with the advent of the portal and with the advent of NIL. I don't know if I would want to be a college basketball coach now. I said to my wife all the time when this stuff happens, I said, "Look, I'm glad I retired. I really am." So if I was given some advice to somebody, I would say, make sure you're ready to make a move as soon as you can, because the players on your team are going to make moves. I was reading today in the Inquirer, all the guys at LaSalle, the top four players on Franny's team, in the portal. Stevie lost a couple guys at Penn. Villanova, those guys that came in, he lost like three of them to the portal. Doesn't mean they have to go to another school, but they're all in the portal. And that happens on the Division II level and the Division III level too. Mm. So it's a tough situation. So my advice to anybody who's going to become a coach is, I'd say keep your options open and make sure you get a chance to, if you do well, try and move yourself up if you can.
Coach, what are you doing now with your time?
Talking to Mark Zumoff on the his podcast, and you know what? I just had an operation on my knee. I had, like, everybody I know had the same operation, the meniscus problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I saw the doctor today for the checkup, so he gave me the okay to play golf. So that, to answer your question, I'm off, you know, as soon as I get a chance. I join a country club, Penn Oaks Country Club, and we play out there all the time. So that's me. I love it. I love playing golf. And Jimmy Lynam belongs to the same club, so we're always in the same foursome or the same group, really. So that's what I do. And now I'm going to be able to walk again with my wife, which we do every morning. And then I got a chance to work out, which I do on the weights that I have set up downstairs. And in the afternoon, I'll go for another walk. And before you know it, she's home and we're having dinner. So the days are filled. That's not a problem. I don't have any problem at all with filling the days.
Coach, you just filled roughly 35 minutes with some great stories and some excellent basketball talk. Love to talk the game with you. So happy we could have you on Fresh 24. Herb McGee, thanks so much for joining us.
Mark, it was absolutely my pleasure.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site, covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.